Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So here's a nice little loophole in the campaign finance laws, in case you didn't know. Individuals can only give $2,300 apiece to presidential candidates, but they can bundle lots more than that, collect money from their friends, coworker, or anyone else, and become a kind of power broker. Bundlers sometimes collect hundreds of thousands of dollars, so they can have the clout that comes with that big a donation, even in the McCain-Feingold post-soft money era. And disclosure of the names and occupations of these bundlers is optional under the law. Now, under pressure from the press, the Obama and McCain campaigns have each released some new information about their bundlers. They're each under pressure to release more. Let's learn what we can with Taylor Lincoln, research director at the watchdog group Public Citizen. Taylor, thanks for coming on WNYC. Hello.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good. Take us more into the law first. What kind of law governs bundling of campaign donations?
Well, no law governs bundling of campaign donations.
That was easy.
But yeah, that's about it. What bundling is it's sort of a hopped-up fundraising activity. I could raise money for you sort of as a hobby, but when we cross the line into bundling, you're keeping track of how much I raise. And so when I have a person give you a campaign contribution, he or she will write a tracking number on it, and you will give me credit and sort of keep my tally there behind the curtain, or announce it to the public in terms of how much I've raised or some range of how much my various fundraisers have raised.
It is sort of ethically different from just writing a $250,000 soft money check yourself, right? You at least have to do the legwork of going out and getting a whole bunch of people to cough up $2,300 or less.
You do. It's different than writing a huge check yourself. And in the course of this conversation, I want to talk about a loophole where people can write pretty big checks themselves.
Huh.
So it is different, but at the same time, the sort of punch that you're packing by bringing in $500,000 or $1 million to a campaign is going to be a lot different than what most Americans are going to do. And in that way, it gets around the intent of campaign finance laws, which are to minimize the importance of any one given person in getting a public official elected to the Senate or to Congress or to the White House.
Because ultimately, this is all about access, for the most part, after the fact, right? After the election.
For some of the people, it's just genuine affection or ideological belief in the candidate, but a lot of times it is about access. About 15% of these people are lobbyists, and those are individuals who, by definition, are in business to wrangle things out of the federal government. And so it's something to be concerned about in terms of access. And when we look back at who President Bush's bundlers were, we can see that the program was sort of a magnet for unsavory souls, like, for instance, Jack Abramoff, in whose name brought down the Republican congressional majority, and Ken Lay of Enron.
Now, we can open up the phones and, of course, the comments page for your questions or comments about bundling in this presidential season. It is 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. If you want to get in with Taylor Lincoln from Public Citizen, or, of course, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. The Washington Post had an op-ed on Saturday criticizing both candidates, but Senator Obama more. I'm going to read the first paragraph. It says, "It wasn't so long ago, last September to be specific, that a senator with a particular interest in campaign finance reform introduced a bill to provide important transparency in presidential campaigns. The measure, Senate Bill 2030, would require presidential campaigns to report the names of fundraisers who bring in bundles of individual contributions totaling $50,000 or more. The campaigns would have to report the occupations of the bundlers and the specific amounts they are credited with raising. This was a terrific idea. It's too bad that the bill's sponsor, Barack Obama, is failing to follow the rules he set out." So, first of all, do you like the bill?
Wonders never cease, huh? We'd love the bill, but that didn't become law, the requirement to report exact amounts.
Oh, that got brought up and defeated, or defeated in committee?
Yeah, that was defeated. But the a bill did pass in the ethics bill that was passed last fall that would require disclosure of the individuals, not the exact amounts, who've raised more than $50,000 for the presidential candidates.
The individuals' names, but not the exact amounts?
For Precisely. Yeah. Well, and which is still something. But what happened is that the FEC didn't have a quorum, and they haven't gotten around to writing the rules to implement that law.
And what about the occupations?
All of that, no. It's sort of an oversight. They say, well, you can look at their campaign contributions to the FEC to figure out the occupations and so forth, but it can actually be pretty difficult.
It makes it a lot harder for people like you and me, people in watchdog groups and people in the media, right? Like, I have a list here of all kinds of bundlers to McCain and to Obama. But since it doesn't list the occupation, then I have to start searching around from scratch for each of these individuals to figure out what their particular interest might be.
Right, right. And it is, if you got a Mark Smith or whatever, it is a challenge. And that's one of the biggest things that we do here is we do a little bit of detective work. And you put various pieces of evidence together, and we can get to some pretty good guesses on common names. But it's a completely unnecessary hoop that we have to jump through. And one of the interesting things, we've been doing this project now for, I guess, just about exactly a year, a little over a year. And one of the interesting things that's happened is that as the issue has gotten more and more attention, and we've been able to bring pressure to bear on the candidates along with the help of other similarly minded groups here in town, they've gotten better. And the irony is that McCain, who is sort of a reformer of yore, but not so much in the current campaign, has jumped out in front of Obama and has been a lot more responsive to our requests. And, you know, said, hey, can you give us the employer and occupation of your bundlers? He writes back and says, you know, I can do that, and various other things that we asked for. And Obama hasn't been very responsive. And I think you can kind of hear the tone of the post-editorial, which is this guy who seemed to be very dedicated to transparency and campaign finance issues has sort of been missing in action on this issue.
Well, exactly.
Now,
they were taking him to task for not voluntarily following the guidelines that he wanted to become law. Any speculation as to why?
My guess is that he's running for president. It's a big job with an awful lot of demands about it. And absent the sort of electoral pressure to come through on these issues, it's probably just not a very high priority.
But McCain, who has less money, less staff, is disclosing to you more than Obama, you say.
Yeah, and McCain gave us a very gracious response to a recent request for more information. I think that McCain sees a potential to exploit this issue to his advantage, especially because Obama had promised that he would also opt in for public funding in the general election if his opponent did, and he wiggled out of that, basically broke that promise. And I think McCain is seeing this as a chance to, if not promote himself to his constituents, to sort of take an issue away from Obama. Obama had sort of seized this issue as one as a reformer and somebody who was going to come clean up Washington. And McCain's been able to eclipse Obama in a lot of ways and also draw favorable media attention. I think that's another issue that's going on, is that for both McCain and Obama, the press has often sort of been referred to as their base, right? The press has swooned at times to both of them, and more recently to Obama than McCain. And one of the reasons that the press really liked Obama was because of these reform credentials and reform priorities. And I think that Obama's hurt himself in the press by not kind of living up to his promises.
And he had already
walked
away from the public financing system. That generated bad press around the exact same issue. But you probably well know, working for the watchdog group Public Citizen, that you're kind of toiling away in the weeds here, and that even though people in the political sector consider, you know, campaign finance sort of the root of all evil. I mean, we go back on this show to 1993,
right,
when Hillary Clinton was running the Health Care Reform Commission. Remember that?
Yep.
And Joseph Califano, the former U.S. Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, as it was called at the time, he came on in 93 and he said, unless they do campaign finance reform first, Hillary's not going to get health reform.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
Yep.
Right? And so here we are. We still don't have much of a different campaign finance system. And still talking about it, and people don't care. We know that people, maybe people who listen to the show, maybe people who are politically obsessed or very informed, realize the connection, but people don't vote on that issue.
No, they don't. And I think that I think you're right. And what I was trying to point out about McCain and why I think that he might be positioning himself out in front of this issue, it may be just because he realizes that folks like yourself and in the media are part of that very small sliver of Americans that really does get it, and in that way is recruiting goodwill from the media, mm-hmm. if not from the country at large, because you're right. Most Americans, one, don't even get the rules on campaign finance, which you can't blame them for because they're incredibly complicated. And two...
Except the rule on bundling.
Well, that one's pretty simple. And two, they don't see the sort of behind-the-scenes connections. You know, and it's not easy to draw the line between the campaign contribution of a year ago or 2 years ago and the way a health care bill gets stopped a year or two later.
If there are no laws on bundling, imagine all the time that regulators save having to draw up the particular enforcement guidelines. Now, David Brooks recently compared McCain donors and Obama donors in his New York Times column. This didn't specifically go to the question of bundling, but I think it starts to answer one of the questions of who gives what to whom and what do they believe in and what do they want. And so it says, as in other recent campaign, lawyers account for the biggest chunk of Democratic donations. They've donated about $18 million to Obama, compared with about $5 million to McCain, according to data released on June 2nd and available at OpenSecrets.org, one of your fellow watchdog groups.
Right.
And then he says, when you break it out by individual companies, you find that employees of Goldman Sachs gave more to Obama than workers of any other employers. And further, the real core of Obama's financial support, he writes, is the rising class of information age analysts. Once the wealthy were solidly Republican, but the information age rewards education with money. And there are many smart high achievers who grew up in liberal suburbs around San Francisco, L.A., and New York, went to left-leaning universities like Harvard and Berkeley, writes David Brooks, and took their values with them when they became investment bankers, doctors, and litigators. So he's taking a shot at the left-leaning universities and coasts. But his bottom line is that those kind of old-style corporate chieftains in the country's midsection tend to be Republican CEOs and bundlers, and those new information age CEOs and other high-powered earners on the coasts tend to be Democratic bundlers and donors. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think that that's fairly accepted in terms of where the battle lines are drawn. Although the thing that you just said that interested me most, was it not that the company that's contributed the most is Merrill Lynch?
Was Goldman Sachs.
Oh, Goldman Sachs, okay. Which is an investment banking firm.
Right.
And there's not a whole lot of tension between Obama's ideology, I wouldn't think, and information age people, Silicon Valley types, and so forth. So in a sense, if they've contributed a lot to him, the things they're not necessarily going to be asking him for things once he becomes president that are, if he becomes president, that are opposed to his ideology. But where I see concern is in these finance sector folks. You know, like, for instance, about a third of Obama's bundlers from New York State are in the securities and investment. And there you have a real tension because you have talk, for instance, of passing legislation to reel in the speculators on oil futures, right? And yet folks in the securities and investment field may not feel the same way. And those are the sorts of areas where Obama could become president, making a lot of promises that are kind of aimed more at middle America or populist America, but then come into the White House and find himself beholden to these folks in the finance sector.
Yeah, and here's more of the top of that list, since you were interested in Goldman Sachs topping it. According to the same column, it says the Goldman Sachs geniuses are followed by employees of the University of California, then UBS, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, National Amusements, Lehman Brothers, Harvard, and Google. So there are a couple of other things in there, Harvard, Google, University of California, National Amusements. I'm not sure what company that is. But look what else is all concentrated at the top of that Obama bundler group, UBS, J.P. Morgan Chase, Lehman Brothers, Citigroup, as well as Goldman Sachs. So we see who's getting their hooks in.
Right. And there was a very interesting question, what I think was the first Democratic debate back when there were 9 or 10 of them on the stage. It was about hedge funds. And it was a question about whether you believe they're helpful or beneficial to society or whatever. And all these Democratic candidates sort of held their tongue and gave these ringing endorsements of hedge funds. And it was at odds with generally with their ideology that they presented as candidates for president. But what it was in line with was their fundraisers.
So then I guess you would agree with another conclusion of Brooks in this column, which is that Obama gets a lot of credit for having about 45% of his money coming from donations of under $200.
Well,
Do you think that number is inaccurate?
No, it's not that the number is inaccurate, but look what's 100 minus 45, you know? Yes, he's gotten a lot of contributions from small donors.
Well, I didn't finish the sentence.
Yeah.
Yes, he gets 45% of his money from donations under $200 or less, and that's probably a lot more than anybody in the history of major presidential candidacies. But he says if the Democrats are elected, this highly educated class donating, you know, a lot of the other 55% will have much more say over policy than during the campaign.
That's right. That's right. And also another thing that I put forth, we're a bit skeptical on all this stuff about the small donors.
Really?
Because to the average American, there's just a different perception in Washington about money than there would be, say, in Michigan, for instance. $200 is a lot of money. You're not just going to walk out and slap $200 bills down on the street. So it's not like these $200 contributing. It's not like a contribution of $200 is akin to a vote, which is free, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a token contribution. So that's something to be noted as well. And we've requested both of the candidates to provide us with demographic data on their $200 contributions because they're not required to be disclosed by the Federal Election Commission.
Hmm.
And the reason is to figure out where these people are coming from. You know, and my guess is that you're going to see a lot of contributions from wealthy suburbs and from university towns and the like, major metropolitan areas, you know, even if you correct for population density versus, you know, less wealthy. Or you're going to see a lot more contributions from the lower part of Manhattan than the much higher part of Manhattan, you know what I mean?
Which tells you what?
Well, which tells me that when we choose our presidents, not just by when campaign contributions are involved in choosing who gets to be the president, it just leaves a disproportionate role to people with more money, and it's sort of anathema to the notion of one person, one vote.
We are going to leave it there for today. Obviously, we're going to continue to follow the money trail with respect to both Obama and McCain, and then follow after the election, after whichever of them is elected, how that money trail correlates to policies that they are asked to enact and the positions that they take as president. So we want to thank Taylor Lincoln, Research Director at the Watchdog Group, Public Citizen. Thanks a lot for coming on.
You got your eye on the ball. Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.